So this ends the 17th chapter of 2 Samuel, and now we're ready to move into the 18th chapter. And in this 18th chapter, we're going to see the actual battle between David's forces and Absalom's forces. This is a civil war. And of course, any victory in a civil war is not sweet. It's not pleasant, because it means that you had to defeat some of your own people in order to be victorious. So beginning in verse 1 of chapter 18, "And David numbered the people that were with him, and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them." Now, we do not know exactly how many men that David had, but we do know that it numbered into the thousands. Josephus says that he had about 4,000 men. And so now David orders these people into an arrangement so that he has captains over them. And he hopes maybe by being better organized than Absalom, that he'll be able to take a smaller force and be victorious. "And David set forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, the sons of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Ittai the Gittite." So we see he divides his army into thirds, and he puts two of his well-proven generals, his two nephews, Joab and Abishai, over two of these groups. And then the third group he puts under the hand of his new friend, Ittai the Gittite. Ittai had fairly recently come over from being a Philistine. He had 600 people with him, and so he already had a little nucleus of an army that he could command. And so David had enough confidence in him that this man was so faithful and so able that he places him over a third part of his army. So we see the organization that David has of his army now. "And the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself also." So now David offers and proposes to go with the army into battle. He wants to lead the army. He wants to be a part of the action. "But the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth." Now the people did not want David to go with them, and they had a good reason for it. Even though this shows bravery and courage on the part of David, it shows that he had a true interest for the welfare of his people. He was willing to fight with them and die with them, yet the people wouldn't have this. "Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither, if half of us die, will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us." So what they're telling David is, you're the one that they want. They can defeat us, and they still will not have gained the victory that they really want. They can kill half of us, and they still haven't really accomplished their goal. What they want is you. They'll be satisfied to kill you only. And that's really what their goal is. So you stay here, and they will not be able to achieve that victory. They'll not be able to achieve that goal, even though it be by chance that someone might be able to deal you a fatal blow. If you're not in the battle, then that chance will not be there. So they say, "Therefore, now it is better that thou succor us out of the city." You stay out of the city, out of the place where the battle is going to be. You give us your instructions, your orders, your comfort, your wisdom by sending messages to us, but do not stay with us, because this then will prevent them from achieving their goal. "And the king said unto them, What seemeth you best, I will do." So David does agree to submit to their wisdom in this matter. They'd said that you're worth more than 10,000 of us, so they're going to protect the most valuable thing that they have upon this occasion, and that is the king himself. Now this is quite different from Absalom. Absalom had rejected the wise advice of Ahithophel, in which Ahithophel offered to lead the army and go that very night and get David. But rather, Absalom took the advice of Hushai, who told him to lead the army himself and to wait a while until he could gather some forces together. So now Absalom is going to be leading his own forces, whereas David followed the advice of his people, and he's going to stay in the background and not be in the active midst of the conflict. "And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands." So David watched his men march past as they left the city, and he gives some last commands now in verse 5. "And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, Deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom." So We see that another reason David shouldn't be in this battle is that he was going to be too tender-hearted when it came to Absalom. And he tells him to deal gently with the young man for my sake, even with Absalom. Deal gently with Absalom. He still doesn't want Absalom killed. He wants, of all the people that are going to be involved in that battle, he'd like for Absalom to be spared. But Absalom had a different attitude. Of all the people that are going to be involved in the conflict, Absalom wanted only David killed. He didn't care whether anybody else was killed or not. He just wanted David killed. And so we see then this great difference of love. David, the most devoted of all fathers, has a son who is the least devoted of all sons. David, who wants to spare his son at all costs, has a son who wants to kill him at all costs. So we see here an example of how David does render good for evil. Never was unnatural hatred to a father more strong than in Absalom, nor was ever natural affection to a child more strong than in David. Each did his utmost and showed what man is capable of doing, how bad it is possible for a child to be to the best of fathers, and how good it is possible for a father to be to the worst of children. And this seems as though it is a good example of man's wickedness toward God and God's mercy toward man. It is hard to say which is the most amazing, the wickedness on the part of the one or the mercy on the part of the other. So David says, deal gently by all means with the young man, even with Absalom, for my sake. And he might have reasoned like this. He's a young man. He's rash and heady, and his age must excuse him. But he's mine. I love him. If you love me, then be not severe with him. These instructions given by David also show that David had a very strong expectation of being successful. He knew that he was going to win the victory here, apparently, because had there been any question about it, he wouldn't have had the option of dealing gently with Absalom, but he would have had to have fought to the very death, and then the victory might not have been sure. But David sure is going to have success. He knows that he has a good cause. He knows that he has God on his side, and he has no doubt that God then will assure them the victory. And verse 5 continues by saying, "And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom." So this was not some hearsay about David's attitude toward Absalom. The people heard it. They witnessed his charge to his generals. Verse 6, "So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim." So here we have the conflict, the actual battle itself. It's not in the city of Mahanaim, but it's in a wood of Ephraim, which is no doubt some wooded area that has been named after some events that have happened to some Ephraimites there. And this would be well known in the time that this story was given, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David. And there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. So very many of the people of Israel, the followers of Absalom, the rebels against the true king, very many of them were slain upon that occasion. 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country. So the men were routed who were following Absalom. They were scattered over the face of all the country. And the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. So David had a rather small force. As we mentioned, Josephus said about 4,000 men. And here 20,000 were killed. But the Bible tells us that the wood devoured more than the sword devoured. That is, for some reason or other, God allowed the natural consequences of this wooded area to bring about the deaths of more people than David's men caused. And we don't know exactly what this was. Maybe the bogs, the stumps, the pits, the thickets, and as some translators understand it, the wild beasts of the wood. Whatever natural phenomenon God chose to use on this occasion, it doesn't matter. The end result was the same. Absalom's army was greatly defeated. 20,000 men were killed. So we see that upon this occasion, God fought for David. Yet, since it was a civil war, in the long run, this was a battle against David. For all those that were slain were David's own subjects. However, they had rebelled and revolted and turned against David. And so the common interest of the kingdom was weakened by this slaughter. And as the Romans used to say, they would allow no triumph for a victory that happened in a civil war. Beginning in verse 9, we have the beginning of the story of Absalom's end. Verse 9 says, "And Absalom met the servants of David." That is, in this battle, he met the forces of David. However, he probably didn't realize it, but the forces of David were under command by David not to do Absalom any harm. However, the battle was fierce enough that Absalom didn't wait around to see if anything was going to happen to him. For verse 9 further says, "And Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away." Now, whether Absalom was in flight or whether he was actually actively engaging in the battle, it's not clear here, but he was riding upon the mule, and this mule went under the boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak. Now, either there was a fork in the branches, or there was some twisting of the branches to create such a device that Absalom's head was caught in this. Now, we're not told whether he was caught by the neck or caught actually by the skull bones. Some seem to think that the great head of hair that Absalom had was what was entangled here. But we're not told for sure, but just that it was his head that was caught. And then when this happened, the mule that was under him went away. The mule ran out from under him. So he was left hanging here by his head, entangled somehow in the branches of this great oak. And he was unable to free himself from this. So you can see then how very vulnerable Absalom must have been hanging here in this position. And the Bible describes him as taken up between the heaven and the earth. He was hanging between two worlds here, as though he didn't belong to either one. He wasn't long to be for the earth. Heaven certainly was not going to receive him due to his wickedness. And so he was a man unworthy of either place. And he hung here between these two areas. Now here was a man who was so proud, who was so haughty, he challenged his father. He challenged the right of David to have the kingship and the throne. And he was going after David to take his life, but yet we see how that he is left hanging in a very defenseless position as the battle is raging. This must have been a most unusual forest, for verse 8 says that the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. And here's an example of how the wood went against Absalom and his forces. Verse 10, "And a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak. So one of the men saw it and he went back to his commander Joab and told him, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak. And Joab said unto the man that told him, And behold, thou sawest him, and why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle." Now Joab asked the man, why didn't you smite him when you had the chance? That was the time to have killed Absalom. If you'd done that, well, I'd have given you 10 shekels of silver and a girdle. And some of the Bible scholars interpret this as meaning I would have given thee a commission of captain in the army. And the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, Beware that none touch the young man Absalom. So here was a man who was faithful to his king. The supreme commander, the sovereign of this whole army, David, had given the command that none was to touch Absalom. And this man heard it, heard David say it, and so he was going to be obedient to the wishes and the demand of David. And so he further says, Otherwise, I should have wrought falsehood against mine own life. And what he's saying is, if I had have killed Absalom, then I would have been placing my own life in jeopardy. For he says, there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself would have set thyself against me. I would have been violating the orders of the supreme commander, and even you would have gone against me. I didn't dare take the man's life. So we see Joab is no longer interested in this conversation. Joab wants to go and take the life of Absalom. So in verse 14, then said Joab, I may not tarry thus with thee. I don't have time to speak with you anymore. I'm not going to discuss this matter any further with you. I've got things to do. And he took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. Now it seems to me that this probably brought about Absalom's death, to have thrust 3 darts into his heart. We see that he was still alive in this oak. He could have been gotten down from the oak and brought to trial, treated like the traitor that he was. His life could have been spared, and David's will could have been carried out here, but it was not. Joab didn't go according to the command of David. He went against David's command. He thrust through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive, hanging from this oak. And verse 15 says, 10 young men that bear Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. So okay. We know here that if those 3 darts given by Joab into the heart of Absalom didn't bring about his death, certainly he was slain by these 10 men. These 10 young men surrounded him, and they took their swords, and they smote him. So we can see that his body was probably dismembered in this action, and he was treated truly in the manner that a traitor ordinarily would be treated. And Joab blew the trumpet, for the people returned from pursuing after Israel, and Joab held back the people. Now, after the death of Absalom, there was no need to fight anymore. This was Israelites killing Israelites. This was a civil war. The victory had been accomplished. The mission had been accomplished. Joab had successfully seen to it that Absalom would not be a threat to the throne any longer. He was now put to death, killed in a very inglorious manner, and so he blew the trumpet to stop the battle. And they took Absalom and cast him into a great pit in the wood and laid a very great heap of stones upon him, so that here Absalom is given a very inglorious burial. He was just cast into a pit. They didn't even preserve his body for an honorable funeral, but he was cast into a pit out in the wood, and then they laid this very great heap of stones upon him, so that this was a most unhonorable and undignified manner for him to have been buried. And then all Israel fled, everyone to his tent. Joab didn't pursue after these defeated soldiers of Absalom. He let them go back home. They were able to go back to their tent, back to their home, so that the war was now over. No prisoners were taken, and it seems that no reprisals were given for the battle. It was a matter of defeating Absalom. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale. So since Absalom didn't have any offspring to follow after him, his 3 sons apparently had died for some reason or other, and this is probably part of God's punishment also. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. So he'd raised a pillar to preserve his honor after he died, and no doubt he had intended to be buried at this monument. This pillar was located in the King's Dale, which is the Valley of Kidron. And this Valley of Kidron is the valley that separates Jerusalem from Mount Olivet. And you have to go across it to get to Mount Olivet from Jerusalem. It's the same valley that David crossed in his flight as he left the city of Jerusalem just shortly before this. And here was Absalom's pillar that he planned to be buried under, that had his name engraved upon it. But he was not buried there. He wasn't buried according to his plans. He made very elaborate plans for his body after his death, which were not carried out, but he made no plans for his soul after death. And we should make the plans for the soul. The soul is what's going to count. It's not where the body is buried or what kind of attention is given to it after our death, but it's what kind of attention we give to our soul so that it'll be taken care of after death. Absalom didn't do this. We see that not only was he not buried in this grand place that he intended to be buried at the foot of this monument, but he also left this life with his soul in a very, very sad shape. His soul is going to be lost because he was a very displeasing person to God. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC.